Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Iranian intrigue. Rouhani rejects Tsar Reif's resignation, focusing on the palace intrigue in the Islamic Republic. President Rouhani rejected his foreign minister's surprise resignation request after the latter implied that he was under serious pressure by an unnamed ruling faction, hinting at serious intrigue in Iran. Zarif made his announcement on the U.S.-based social media platform Instagram, of all places, and coincidentally on the same day as Syrian President Assad's first visit to the Islamic Republic since his country's conflict began. He apologized to his countrymen for vague shortcomings and then gave an interview where he criticized political infighting as a deadly poison for his country's foreign policy, in what many interpreted as a jab at institutional opponents of the failing 2015 nuclear deal. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA, wouldn't have been possible had it not been for Zarif, but the agreement was controversial from the get-go, after some suspected that the U.S. wouldn't ever fully honor its obligations and was just trying to get Iranian society's guard down before the next destabilization attempt. Trump's unilateral withdrawal from the deal dealt a heavy blow to Zarif's political reputation, but more so to the ruling faction that he's regarded as representing. Zarif and President Rouhani are associated with the reformists, popularly known as moderates in the West, while their opponents are considered to be principalists, described as conservatives by outside observers. The greatest fault line between the two factions is the JCPOA, but some have speculated that other divisions are also emerging over the Russian-Saudi OPEC Plus agreement and the closing stages of the war on Syria. About the first mention, the de facto joint control that Moscow and Riyadh have over the oil market is thought to have deprived Tehran of some much-needed additional profits, while the latter concerns international pressure over the potential withdrawal of Iranian forces from the Arab Republic. Reformist and principalist have been feuding with one another for a while now behind the scenes, but the drama surrounding Zarif's resignation request is bringing it all out into the open. Okay, folks, so I gotta say, some of us were not actually that surprised by what's happening. A lot of us have been talking about these political fault lines for a long while now, but we were dismissed as so-called conspiracy theorists or worse. But now we see that we are vindicated in hindsight after everything that's been happening this week in Iran. So we're going to speak to two guests this week who will responsibly try to explain to us what's happening and where it's all headed. Now, the first one that we're going to talk to today is Mr. Arman Mahmoudian. He's a researcher at the Center for Strategic and Diplomatic Studies at the University of South Florida. And you can follow him on Twitter at Mahmoudian Arman.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Arman, now why did Zarif decide to announce his resignation on Instagram? Is it because it's popular in Iran, or was he also sending a reformist message by posting on a U.S.-based social media platform? Like, why didn't he go through a more traditional channel instead?
I believe he announced his resignation on Instagram because Instagram is the most popular social network in Iran. As a matter of fact, in the absence of other main social networks like Facebook, Twitter, because they were banned by the state, Instagram is dominating the social networks era among the Iranian society. But regarding the audience of his aggression and to whom he sent a message, I think I must say that actually Zarif did his best to target and aim Iranian as his audience. If his main intention was sending a message to West, he probably would announce it on his Twitter account, which is world-renowned. But, Andrew, you raise a good question on why he did not go through a traditional channel, you know, sending a letter just to President in a non-public way. Apparently, and I quote from Mr. Fulad Pishe, who is a member of Iran's parliament and is the head of the National Security Committee in parliament, Mr. Zarif, during the last five years, has resigned from his position for several times, but through the traditional way, you know, just in sending a letter to the presidents. But in all of these times, his resignation had been rejected, and he did not mention that who rejected the resignation. It was a supreme leader or was a president. So therefore, we can say that maybe this time Zarif went through this unorthodox way to show how he's serious, or even he might try to get a sort of social support for himself and for pushing his agenda forward.
Okay, very interesting. Now, I want to ask you kind of like an historical contextual question here. You know, Russia's 16th century Tsar Ivan Grozny, who's misnamed as Ivan the Terrible by the West, pulled a strategic ploy where he temporarily abdicated in order to have people beg for his return. So, do you think that Zarif was trying to do something similar as a judo move against his factional rivals?
Well, the official statement is that Zarif resigned because he was offended by the way that the establishment disregarded the protocol during Assad's visit to Tehran and did not inform Zarif as a foreign minister in advance. As it obvious from the photos of Assad's visit to Tehran, he wasn't in any of meetings, even in a meeting between Assad and president that usually foreign minister should show a presence in these sort of meetings. Although I personally believe that he also might try to project his frustration with expediency discernment council of system over FATF and Palermo Convention. You know, in the last months, there was a rising tension between Mr. Rouhani's establishment and the moderates with the conservatives in the parliament and expediency council over passing bills to open Iran's way to join to United Nations Convention against transnational organized crime. So one can say that Zarif, as a person who has a leading role among the pro-joining the group in the Rouhani's establishment, might try to project a sort of social pressure with his resignation on conservatives in the council and in the parliament in order to push them to pass the bill and open Iran's way to join to FATF and Palermo Convention.
Okay then, Armand, now how serious would you assess the factional split between the reformist and principalist as being after the latest events surrounding Zarif's resignation request? And which of the two do you think will ultimately come out on top in this increasingly public struggle for power?
I say that at least for now things turn up in favor of reformists. Zarif's resignation caused a sort of mass public support for himself and for Rouhani establishment, which Rouhani really needs it at this time, which Iran facing a huge financial crisis. And the public were not the only faction who showed a sort of support. Even the key figures, like General Soleimani, a commander of IRGC Ghuds forces, made a supportive comment. He said that Supreme Leader trusts Zarif and establishment strongly support him. So obviously these developments at some point promote reformist situation, but I think it is temporary. Because there are a dozen of external and internal factors which will affect the ultimate outcome. I think the most important one is the US presidential election in 2020, actually. If Trump wins the election, there is a great chance that the establishment put his strange on its principalists and fundamentalists and go for more aggressive foreign policy, as we witnessed in the Bush second presidency, which Ahmadinejad came up. But if the Democrats, especially people like Biden or Sanders, win, and U.S. return to JCPOA and lift the sanctions, again, we can say reformists might have a significant chance to remain in power.
Alrighty then, Armand. I gotta say, this was a very balanced analysis, and you provide a lot of thought-provoking insight that certainly gave us a lot to ponder over. Thank you for helping us try to better understand what's happening in Iran. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Ali Moussaoui has to say. Ali is a correspondent based in Baghdad.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Ali, what do you make out of the timing of Zarif's resignation request on the same day as President Assad's visit to Iran? He wasn't present at Assad's two meetings with President Rouhani and the Ayatollah, but his presence was surely felt afterwards when he became the center of attention with his Instagram post.
From the first instance, it looked like his resignation at the time was mainly due to the fact that he wasn't present at the visit of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. That's on the surface of things. He did mention that it's a lack of coordination and cooperation and infighting as the reason for his resignation. But if we look deeper, it seems that it has it's more than that. Even the Iranian foreign ministry said that it was lack of cooperation and from the Iranian president's office and something along that line to try and make it, that's the only reason. However, that reason doesn't seem to be enough for someone like Mohammad Javad Zarif to resign from such an important post. If you've seen the pictures of Syrian President Assad is meeting with Rouhani, you notice that Al-Quds forces, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards group, far wing commander, Qasem Soleimani, was present. Now, this is unheard of before for him to be present in such a meeting, showing that most likely that Assad's secret visit came through the Qasem Soleimani side. And this is why Zarif wasn't informed, showing that this part of Iranian politics or part of Iranians dealing with the world has basically they overrule certain ministries, one of them being the foreign ministry that wasn't even informed of the visit or made aware of Assad's presence in Iran.
Fascinating insight. Thank you for explaining that. So it sounds like although Assad's meeting and Mr. Zarif's not being invited, there might have been the trigger for his resignation request. There were a lot of other deeper issues that preceded it. So now if we go forward then, Ali, which of the foreign policy fault lines do you think is the most relevant in explaining the current factionalist divide between what some people describe as the reformist and the principalist? And what does it say about the significance of this issue that one side might have, you know, as some people are saying, make a power grab over the other because of it?
Well, it's the nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that was spearheaded by Zarif himself and President Rouhani. And now, this has been rejected by the principalist, the set of conservative politicians and political parties in Iran, and was wholly celebrated by the reformists in Iran as a way that Iran will open up to the world and the world will open up to Iran. Even when the deal was signed, Iranian Supreme Leader Sayyid Ali Khamenei warned that they can't trust the U.S. with such a huge deal. Now it seems that Khamenei's words have come true, that the U.S. has reneged from its deal and the other partners in the deal are powerless to do anything about it. This has turned the tide in favor of the principalist in Iran. And so far, Rouhani and Zarif are feeling the pressure by the Iranian people, especially with the economic situation in the country.
Okay, yeah, so it sounds like there's a legitimate basis for these divisions and that they're coming from the outcome of the JCPOA, which has been pretty unexpected for the reformists. Now, how do you see Iran's enemies, you know, the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia, possibly trying to exploit the appearance of these deep state divisions in Iran? And how successful do you think any possible attempts might be?
Well, Iran has always been viewed in the media and to the world, has always been viewed as almost dictatorial rule by Iranian Supreme Leader Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He has the final say and he controls everything. That's the way it's viewed. Now, over the years, they tried to portray any kind of political division or political disagreements or rivalries as potential problems within the ranks of the regime. We've seen that before. We've seen that many times, especially during the final years of former President Ahmadinejad's reign. And they said there was huge disagreements between him and Sayyid Khamenei. This was true. There were many disagreements, but it didn't change anything. There is a democracy of sort in Iran, and various political parties will disagree and will try to, well, highlight and point out the faults of the other party or the other side's action. And this is what's happening here in Iran. You have one side that sided with the deal, the nuclear deal with the world powers, and one side didn't. Right now, it seems that the side who opposed the deal are the ones winning the people's attention, and they basically have more to gain from what's happening right now. But that's all it is. I mean, what the West, the U.S. or Iranian enemies would do is that they will try to highlight it as a huge rift and could be the end of the regime and a collapse of the regime. We've seen it so many times in the past. Even late last year in November, John Bolton said that Iran won't reach its 40th year. It'll collapse. And we're now almost a month into the 40th year of the Iranian Revolution, and it's still going, and it doesn't look like it's going to change much, mainly due to the fact that Iran is always misportrayed in the media. It's always portrayed as the dictatorial rule that no one has a say, and there's no freedom, and there is no they're not allowed to do anything without the approval of the regime and so on. And of course, this is not the case. And this is why you'll always see such misinformation in the media that in the end, it won't amount to anything.
Okay, Ali, this was a very intriguing glimpse at what might be happening behind the curtains in Iran. As with any country, there are differences of strategic outlook within its permanent bureaucracy, but it seems like Iran's fault lines are publicly reemerging after Trump put the JCPOA in jeopardy. So thank you for sharing your views with us today.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we think back on what both Armand and Ali share with us today, I think we can conclude that, yes, there certainly is some type of a power struggle going on behind the scenes in Iran. Whether or not it's very intense is definitely up for grabs. I mean, some people say that this might be a battle for the death, so to speak. Other people might think that it's more moderate. It's nothing to get too alarmed about. Now, in my personal opinion, after hearing what both of our experts have to say, I think that it is increasingly a concern, but not one that should be blown out of proportion thus far. We still have to see what happens by this weekend and next week and whether or not the situation behind the scenes stabilizes. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Karepko. Thank you for listening and take care.